This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Things have not improved significantly for the Mariners since you went to bed last night. They've not gotten better after the 6-0 loss to the Oakland A's. The Mariners headed down to take on the Angels today. First pitch, I believe, 6:35. You can hear that right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Kyle Lewis, who was placed on the injured list 2 days ago with soreness, discomfort in his right knee, is seeking a second opinion. Jerry DePoto, the Mariners general manager, just told us that it's not this. Don't expect this to be a quick absence. While they're hoping that Justin Dunn is able to come back fairly quickly, that's probably not going to be the case with Kyle Lewis, and that they're hoping to see him again this season, but it's not going to be in the next days and weeks. And the second subject that came up was Jared Kelnick, who got the day off, and the question of what are the potential options they have for a player who has not been hitting at the big league level and is in fact in an 0-for-28 slide. Here was Jerry when asked if a trip back to Tacoma might be in order, might be a possibility of that.
You know, and anything's possible as it's necessary, but I will say this about JK. He's not going to bat at 120 for the year. I'd say he's much better than that on a skill level. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I think prior to this homestand, especially the series with the A's, Jared's at bats, I mean, really good. And he's hitting the ball hard and he's doing all the right things. And if you would have told me that, you know, 2.5 weeks into his major league career, he was going to have a 9% walk rate and a 25% strikeout rate, I'd say, sign me up. This is going to go really well.
So to him, those last two things show that he can handle major league pitching. And he does expect the luck, I guess, for Kelnick to change. I do wonder, though, it's not a small sample size at this point as far as the bad luck he's had.
Isn't it? Two and a half weeks is exceptionally small.
Is it 2.5? It feels like it's been 3. I guess that's not much of a difference. When they are all going, I guess, to the same spots, they are all flyouts to the same parts of the outfield, I guess, where do you expect the ball to eventually drop if it's being hit in the same way?
Well, you want him to hit the ball harder. There's a limit on how much you can control the direction,
yeah,
and the placement. I mean, pulling it or going the other way. The expectation, I think what Jerry's saying is that the process, if you're focused on the process, you control walks and you can control strikeouts. And to a certain extent, you can control home runs. There's only so much control you have over the average that you'll have on balls in play. That part much more is due to luck or defensive placement, like all of those things. And that so far, him having a batting average of 120 on balls in play, like that's so low that that's not going to stay the same. He's going to start getting more hits based on the balls that he puts in play. Now, that still doesn't mean that he's going to, the average is going to rocket up because, right. A, you get more or even get to league average. I mean, he's gone through an 0-for-28 slide, but he's saying that the strikeouts and walk numbers are not alarming currently. The strikeout and walk numbers show that he hasn't lost sight of the strike zone. Specifically, what you worry about is a guy stops walking and start striking out a ton more, because that usually is an indicator that he's swinging at bad pitches. He's compromised his approach. He's either lost his eye or he's getting desperate and he's pressing so hard that he's swinging at pitches that aren't strikes, and that's the death knell for a young hitter.
And based off of what we've seen thus far, that's probably the only possibility with Kelnick, because it does feel as if, as you mentioned, he does have a pretty good grasp of the strike zone, and we've seen in a couple of at-bats over the last couple of games, maybe not on Tuesday, but on Monday, there were a couple of at-bats in that game where you're like, oh, yeah, and including later in the game, too, in a high-intensity spot.
What would you do? Would you send him down at this point? You don't have Kyle Lewis for the foreseeable future.
Not yet. I think that kind of works against the possibility of pushing him down, too, right? I think for both, absolutely, for Mel and for him. And I guess that could be levity off of both of them, where they're maybe thinking to themselves, okay, well, we can play and we can stick to our process and there's no possibility of us being moved down. Because you don't want to have that in the back of your mind. No one in their job wants to know that there may be something around the corner that could mean that they're going to be in a different spot, you know? Like, you don't want that. So I would say when it comes to these two, and specifically with Kelnick, yeah, let this play out a little bit more, and you are helped by the Kyle Lewis situation if you're looking for any positive to take out of something that's going to keep him out a while, as we heard from Jerry this morning.
You're right, it may reduce the pressure that Trammell and Kelnick feel. It increases the pressure, though, for the organization to get a return from Kelnick, right? That writing and signing it all off, anything that happens this year to the development of the player, it makes it a little tougher living with that at the major league level when you've got a team that's collectively hitting 200 to sit there and say, okay, one of our outfield spots is being occupied by a guy that we're just not getting any production out of. It increases the pressure that they would feel to search out alternatives in the outfield if he doesn't start hitting.
Fraley, and the way that he has played, it's been
Fraley's
surprising.
So weird, man. No, I don't understand what's going on with Fraley. That dude is walking every other time he gets to the plate, and it's like Manaea yesterday walked him on four pitches and they just weren't close. I don't know if that guy's got some sort of weird voodoo eyes where he's able. I have never seen a player. No,
bigger
I've never seen a
eyes, Fraley or Tom Murphy.
I have never seen a player other than steroid Barry Bonds, like other than steroidy addled Barry Bonds
well, clearly
that walked
it's Barry Bonds.
with this frequency. It's fundamentally baffling to me because I would think honestly, like Fraley is a player that pitchers couldn't wait to throw strikes to, and instead, to say that he's walking every other at bat is not much of an exaggeration.
18 at bats, 13 walks on the year thus far.
So he's been up to the plate 31, I think it's 32 times.
Yep, 31.
And he's walked 13 times.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
His batting average is 167, and his on-base percentage is .531.
That's wild. I've never seen anything like it, and I don't understand it at all. Completely baffling.
Makes no sense whatsoever. But I like it. And you know what? If you can get that out of him somehow, some way, actually adding productivity to this lineup, it's way more than I honestly was expecting out of him this year.
Yeah, and with Kelnick, as Jerry, I was encouraged. He took two walks in the first game against Oakland. I think that was the Monday game. And he ended up being called out on a called third strike in the ninth inning. The Mariners ended up winning in extra innings. Asking Jerry kind of what he's seeing from the player, and he admitted that you can see that it's starting to wear on him a little bit.
You can see the frustration starting to build up, especially with this last series with the A's. And it's frustrating for a player who is used to, I mean, he's not used to getting a hit a night. Mm-hmm. He's used to getting multiples. And, you know, for him to go out and go through a stretch like this where he's now, you know, it's a dry spell north of 20 plate appearances, I was proud of him in the first game of the Oakland series for going up there and taking his walks. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's it's the key. That's how you get out of these things is you see pitches.
He is, at the very least, seeing them. It's now a matter of putting them in play. Some interesting texts that we're getting, Danny, on the Mac and Jack's Brewing Company text line. Remember when we sent A-Rod down for a month after his call-up? He came back and raked. Another texter, not suggesting necessarily that they send him down at this point, but sometimes sending someone down, it's like cycling power off and on again in electronics. It works, but people don't really 100% know why. But I do think that's something that you are kicking the can down the road on.
Waiting to do it, you mean?
Yeah.
Sort of holding off. Do you hold off for another couple weeks? What's your timeline? Because, and I guess that depends partly on the results. That's the hard part of this for me. Is that it seems like now it's not about the process, but about the results with Kelnick. And that seems contrary to what has been offered up as the plan for development with the players. I don't think it's a bad thing to send him down. And I'm not resistant to that. The part that's hard is seeing that, okay, he's going to start the season in AAA. But he plays a week there, then gets promoted, put in the leadoff spot. Now he's been moved out of that leadoff spot because it hasn't been going well. And look, I guess you just take it. It's a results-oriented business, and if he's not hitting, move him down and see if that sort of helps him in the same way maybe it helped Taylor Trammell. But that feels an awful lot of flying by the seat of your pants when it comes to player development.
Over the next couple of weeks, the schedule does open up. I would say specifically, Angels,
every time we say that, they just get bludgeoned, though.
True.
Every time we say that, they get hammered by the Orioles or they get swept by
no
the Tigers.
That
it's awful. I'm tired. No, we're not saying they're going to face easier
well,
pitching.
Well, shouldn't your? I mean, that should be for Kelenic specifically. Let's not talk about the win loss side of it and perhaps jinx that. The Angels, Tigers, and Twins are three of the next four teams you play. And those are three of the four worst teams in the American League. So you would think that there will be some opportunities for Kelenic to actually hit against teams that aren't very good. But this is wishful thinking at this point, Danny. I will fully admit it.
If you titled a book called You Would Think, what would that book be about? It would be all the things that you expect to be true that are not, right? Yeah. Like you would think. How many people have gotten themselves into trouble by starting an idea by, well, you would think... Like, that just sounds like the explanation.
Well, failure in war has been a result of, well, you would think that the Allies aren't going to attack us. Right.
You would think that this should be an opportunity, and he took a day off yesterday, and he should have caught his breath, and he goes up against the Angels and maybe is able to jumpstart things tonight. You would think. Feels like those are famous last words.
Generally, yeah, especially in war. I'm glad you just glossed over my voice crack, by the way. That was pretty bad.
I'm not at panic stage with Kelenic, and I feel like I'm one of the more patient part of the approach. I would have left him in the leadoff spot and just trust him that he is going to figure it out, and there are enough players that have shown in a track record that, I mean, Mike Trout didn't stay up the first time he came up. He was called up for an injury replacement, ended up going back down before he was called up for good. I know Vlad Guerrero had a really, really slow start to his major league career. There are a number of guys for whom even Kelenic's bad numbers and hitting 120 and going hitless for now more than, is it 26, 28 at-bats? Mm. It's a struggle, but it's not unprecedented. He's homered twice. We've seen him hit the ball hard. I'm not as worried about that as much as I am. Now it seems like you've lost a little bit of the wiggle room that you had. I don't know how many other options you have in the outfield outside of him.
Pick between one of these two. Who do you feel like has a better grasp of the major league level? Taylor Trammell or Jared Kelenic? Totally different prospects, I think, as far as expectations go long term.
Well, it has to be Trammell, right? We've seen him hit in spring training. We saw him struggle in the major leagues. We saw him strike out a ton. Then he got sent down, and all he did in his week or 2 weeks down in Tacoma was just clobber pitching.
Right.
And he came back up, and he stung the ball. All he's done since he came back up is sting the ball.
Is there anything that can be learned from that outside of, as the texter said,
hit the ball hard.
Cycle.
Hit it hard.
Do a power cycle and hit the ball hard.
Hit the ball hard. When you get a pitch that you can do something with, yank it 425 feet like Taylor Trammell
did. Okay, that's, I think, effective strategy. You just actually have to make contact with the baseball.
And with Kelenic, the fact that his walks and his strikeouts, like they're about, he is striking out a lot, but it's not more than current day players are striking. He's not striking out at a higher clip than anybody else. 25% of the time, he's getting the amount of walks that he usually does. Like, you'd feel okay about that he seems to still have a command of the strike zone, and he's not chasing. But those are things to watch, because if the strikeouts start spiking or the walks start dropping significantly, and usually those are tied together, you will need to look at making a more drastic change with him. It is Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Maura, what's up?
Just lots of variety with Paul. How much, guys? How are you? Is your voice okay, Paul?
We're not 100% sure. Me, myself, and I.
Sorry, you commended Danny for letting your voice crack go, and then I brought it up.
Are you supposed to be embarrassed when your voice cracks? Because I've never been embarrassed.
I don't know. I'm really not 100% sure. I'm never embarrassed by it. But I imagine for some people, it's not exactly the best thing to be listening to as you maybe are heading into work on a Thursday morning.
It's embarrassing if you're Kirk Cousins yelling, "You like that," in your voice.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to be, "You like that?" Yeah.
So when you're trying to be super masculine and you can't pull it off and all of a sudden you're like, ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was embarrassing. All right, guys. First up, Aqib Talib weighed in on where Julio Jones should end up on his Catch and Fades podcast.
I done been in the meeting room getting ready for Julio Jones before, right? And he take up all your first, second down day. He take up all your third down day. He take up all your red zone day. Even your 2 minute day. He running crazy seven and go. You know what I'm saying? But you add Julio Jones to Seattle, I guarantee you Vegas boost them odds up. Them guys are come close to being a favorite just from Julio. Man, I could see it now. Russell dip in, dip back out, scramble around. Julio going this way, Lockett going this way. DK come across the middle, him bomb something to Julio. I can see it right now, man. So if Julio want to win, that's one of the spots. You'll go there, Julio. You will definitely win, man.
How much say do you think Julio has in this decision?
As far as where he goes?
Yep.
None. If he had a no-trade clause, yes, he doesn't. I feel like the attempt to make good by Julio Jones, too, the opportunity to do that has gone out the window. Like, they've burned that bridge. So, now that that's out the door, you have to get the most you possibly can in return for him. It does feel like, though, by the day, that they are going to get less for Julio Jones. And maybe that opens up John Schneider's draft basket box. And he decides, hey, all right, fourth round, third round. I doubt it would get to that point, though. There's got to be some team desperate enough to add wide receiver talent that they'd be willing to trade a second for a guy who's been arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL, right? I mean, some team has to think to themselves right now, we can just take care of this right now, and we're going to get something better with him than there's any chance that we would have of getting with whatever second round pick we have next season.
Bruce Arians was on a Rich Eisen show, and he told him that the Bucs told Tom Brady about their plans to draft a quarterback, Kyle Trask, ahead of time. And also, he asked Brady to scout potential wide receivers in the draft. Is he just trolling Aaron Rodgers and Russ at this point?
Like, yeah, I think so. There's certainly the asking him about to scouting wide receivers and telling him that they were going to draft Kyle Trask, both of those things. It's a totally... The Kyle Trask-Brady thing, though, is totally different. Brady knows it's a year-to-year proposition at this point, right? Like, if you're like, hey, we're drafting a quarterback, Brady's like, yeah, I totally understand why.
I don't know if he believes that. Honestly, if you're asking Tom Brady, by the way, for his opinion on quarterbacks, you should definitely be thinking in the back of your head, is he going to recommend somebody that actually can compete with him? Or is he going to recommend someone that he sees as never having the ability to even be on the same field as him? And I think that the latter is a possibility. It is interesting that for the most part, in Brady's career, Brian Hoyer has been a consistent backup for him. Where, with Jimmy Garoppolo, that did not last very long. With Jared Stidham.
Other teams wanted Ryan Mallett and Matt Castle. They didn't work out, but people wanted them.
Yeah, I remember when Mike Mayock was trying to make that happen, and then the Texans got him, and then I saw Ryan Mallett firsthand. It's interesting. I feel like Brady is definitely not the person to ask about quarterbacks with. Wide receivers, though, that's another story entirely.
Well, yeah, he didn't. He said they just warned him they were going to draft a quarterback, but they asked his opinion on the receivers. Arians did add that he told him he was going to critique his scouting when it came to receivers. So maybe Carroll just needs to tell Russell, like, sure, you can have some input, but then we're going to see whether you're a good scout or not.
Solid troll job. Solid troll job on the part of
so
Arians.
So you think it is a troll job? Okay.
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I mean, Arians has got the ability to say, like, yeah, we asked him to go ahead and take a look and tell us. Like, yes, we love it. And if it makes a little more uncomfortable among his others, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Ben Standig of The Athletic reports that Washington wide receiver Terry McLaurin worked on his release off the line with Doug Baldwin this offseason. He said, quote, there's a lot of film out on me now. If I can win at the line, that definitely gives me an advantage. So that's something I wanted to hone in on coming into this year.
I wonder about, well, first off, when I saw this, I got jealous. I wish Doug Baldwin was doing this with the Seahawks. And I know that that maybe isn't something that's a possibility given his relationship with certain players, at least based off of the rumors that we hear about it. Terry McLaurin is, I think, a really talented wide receiver. And there's a part of me that wishes that Doug Baldwin was doing this with DK Metcalf instead. But DK Metcalf is firmly within the court of Russell Wilson, right?
I don't know if that's, I don't know if it's that complicated. I don't think Doug would hesitate to help if one of the Seahawks receivers asked. I think it's a matter of what could Doug, what in common, what technique would Doug teach DK? Because, I mean, clearly, but is DK going to be able to do the things that Doug did to get a release? Aren't they different players? I mean, McLaurin's pretty small. Isn't McLaurin's built like Doug is?
Right, that is true. Yeah. So that's definitely something to factor in. But I think if I were a bigger wide receiver, I would want, almost like in Game of Thrones, a dance master. Somebody who's going to help me with my quickness and my lateral agility and help me perfect the art of running routes. Because, you know, DK's got everything else. He really does. It's just a matter of, is he going to be better at squaring off routes and things like that?
Yeah, it's a bummer. I get
I'm jealous.
What you're saying.
Right. It's yeah. it's more just jealousy. And good for Terry McLaurin. I really like McLaurin. And I'm curious to see what he'll do with Fitzpatrick this year.
Miss you, Doug.
That's going to be a fun team.
All right. In the spin cycle or the hype mobile today, we have Dan Campbell, Lions head coach, talking to the Detroit Free Press about Jared Goff and OTAs. He said he made about 5 throws yesterday that were just wow.
Kneecap bite worthy.
I saw a picture. I think he showed up to a press conference today, or maybe it was yesterday, wearing a Formula One helmet, like a race car driver helmet. Okay. He's going to be the Grand Marshal of the Detroit Grand Prix.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this. I love the salesmanship that comes along this time of year with the fresh start. The polishing of Jared Goff is going to be one that is particularly exciting for me. I hope they start out 2-0, and then we start hearing about how good Goff might be. Hell, I hope that the Lions finish with more wins than the Rams, because if that happens, like, how bad's McVay going to look? If Goff looks
really
good,
bad.
how bad's McVay going to look?
He's going to look like an impatient person that does not know truly how to coach up a quarterback. But it's so
right.
unlikely to happen. It's so unlikely to happen. Detroit, like Houston, they do not have much talent. And while I actually have started to like Dan Campbell, it's going to be really difficult, I think, for Goff to look anything better than he did last year.
It's a no-lose situation. Either Goff's terrible and that confirms our bias, or he's great and that makes McVay look bad. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll have a little bit of the new podcast that's sweeping the NFL, Beavis and Butthead. You'll hear an excerpt from that and more bad news for the Mariners. Ugh, next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny Gallant. We had Jerry DePoto on with us a little bit earlier, about an hour ago. And dude, they've had to do so much baling wire and duct tape to apply to keep this team together.
What's baling wire? It sounds really fancy.
Yeah, baling wire is what you use to put a bale of hay together.
Oh, okay. This is what you do out in the country.
Yes, baling wire. And usually when you talk about improvising and holding something together, you use some baling wire and some duct tape together. That's how you'd fix a race car in a pinch.
Okay.
A little too much fender mashing. Yeah. Put some Bondo on there.
You know, for all the talk about how, you know, we millennials don't know how to do anything yourself, I totally understand why now. Because Danny, he has it in spades right now.
Well, I don't know about that. But holding everything together through the injuries they've had in their pitching staff and now in the outfield. Kyle Lewis went on the injured list a couple days ago with, he left Monday's game with discomfort in his right knee. He has not played the past two. And while there's hope that he'll be back this season, it sounds like we should be prepared for a sustained absence from Lewis here as he seeks a second opinion on that right knee. Here is Jerry DePoto.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And, you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
It's a bummer. I mean, I feel like there's a potential that he's out for the rest of the season hearing that.
Yeah, I think that's fair that, hey, we hope he's back. If you looked and started this season and said if everything goes right, they could contend and make the playoffs like that. If everything goes right for them, it's been an awful long way from everything going right through this season so far. In fact, they've had an awful lot go wrong, starting with the injury to James Paxton and continuing through the continued questions about availability among their pitching staff, both injuries, COVID infections, the fact that Kendall Graveman is not available, the fact that you've got LJ Newsome, Nick Margavichus not available, Eric Swanson on that list, all of these different things. It's been an awful long way from everything going right for them.
Yeah, man. That they have been able to maneuver through it deserves some credit.
Yeah, they've stayed relevant, competitive, have had some good stretches, and those are all compliments. And the overall situation around the league has played to their benefit. You don't have anybody running away and hiding, even in the division. It looks like everybody's kind of bunched up together. You've still got the possibility, but it feels like this is a blow to a lineup that has already been challenged to produce runs, and he was one of the guys that was doing that.
You don't have much power at this point in time. You know, it's Mitch Haniger. It's if Kelnick can ever make contact with the baseball, we believe Kelnick. It's Taylor Trammell. I mean, those are the guys that you were looking for, I guess, for power from this standpoint or at this point in time. And Kyle Seager, I guess, is in that conversation too. But after that, man, it's missing. It's sorely missing, and that's not good in today's baseball, obviously.
Yeah, power's been part of the issue. They're just not putting the ball in play. Like, if there's the number one thing, you've got a young athletic team, and that should lend itself toward being aggressive on the base paths and running around, and you're just not putting the ball in play. And they're hitting 200 as a team, and you need to put more balls in play. Like, that period point blank needs to happen. And this certainly isn't a step in that direction because he was one of your top three or four hitters in an ideal world and in practice this year. He was one of the guys who was putting the ball in play.
He was getting into a groove, too, and then all of a sudden it snapped. He is no more, at least for the time being.
Jared Kelnick, there are no plans to move him back to AAA in the near future, and Jerry pointed specifically toward the fact that he is still drawing walks. And his strikeout numbers have not spiked as reasons to believe that the process that he's sticking to his process and the results will start to even out, that he's been maybe had some bad luck so far when it comes to hitting the ball at people, and not that his batting average on balls that he's put in play is unsustainably low, so that should even out. But that's been one too of if you're Jerry, you've got to be monitoring that to see what's right for the player and whether, if it comes to it, he could eventually use a spell in AAA.
Yeah, and I feel like that has to be something that they consider. It seems like it, at the very least, in the short term, has worked out for Taylor Trammell, but we're talking about a really limited amount of at-bats. It's just that you saw the home run very early from him, which was something that we had consistently seen. At the very least, the one thing that we knew that Trammell had when he was up at the major league level the first time was that when he makes contact with the baseball, he can drive that thing out of the park. He's got some real power, and the hope is that he makes more contact with it. So maybe with Kelnick, that's something that could be a possibility too, but you probably have to wait, and I would probably wait through this stretch of games, which maybe it's wishful thinking, but you're going up against some teams that are not very good, and as a texter brought up, I think this is a good point. Maybe it helps for Kelnick to go on the road. Maybe it helps for him to get away from T-Mobile Park because it's not exactly the most advantageous situation when it comes to just the depth, the giantness, the open nature of it. And, of course, as even though it's been warm the last couple of days, the actual weather holding the ball up and keeping it from going as far as it could possibly go.
Is it a week-by-week situation with Kelnick? And I guess what I say, you've got, what, 7 games that are coming up on the road? You've got a 10-game road trip. 4 games at the Angels, 3 at Detroit, 3 at Cleveland. Do you revisit how he's doing at the end of that road trip? Or do you take a more of a microscope to it? Because I do think that you need to frame it. Like, if you don't see him start to get some success, do you consider making a change in the middle of the road trip? Or do you look at it and say, all right, we got another 10 games and we'll revisit this at the end?
I think the end. Go the whole way through it. Help him see if he can do that over the course of a long road trip. I mean, it's a long one. And that could be a big benefit to his confidence if he were able to make things start to happen when he's away from Seattle.
Isn't it amazing that you've seen the change go through of people being convinced that the Mariners were holding him back to now people equally convinced that he's being held and kept at a level that he's in over his head? Like, how sharply that spike or that
yeah,
turnaround,
man,
has happened. Because, and it shows you that it is, for as much as we talk about process, and for as much as a development, I do think the good teams focus on the process and try to sift out some of the short-term results, that ultimately the way things are evaluated, I mean, you can't convince anybody now. Nobody remembers when they were saying, why don't they bring him up? Nobody remembers that at all right now. Now they're like, why are they keeping him here?
It's about process for the organization. It's about,
yes,
hope for fans, and that's why you were seeing the up and down. The hope of Kelnick coming up to the majors has now been replaced by a feeling of hopelessness that he is perhaps like some of the other previous Mariners prospects that didn't fare so well.
Get a stiff upper lip. Toughen up.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Seriously.
But it's easier said than done, right? When it's been 20 years of this?
Yeah, no. I've been here too. I've sat through all the same things. These people need to toughen up. I don't want to hear any more whining about curses or any of that. We've got it. This is a process that we're in the third year of the rebuilding. I don't want to hear any whining. No complaining. Rule number one violators, no whining.
No whining.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise, throw, and pick up flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is that time. That time at the end of the show where we throw flags. We raise flags. It's a nice way to wrap things up. Danny, would you like to go first?
Sure. I'm throwing a flag on the two bros who coach in the NFC West who got together for a podcast called Flying Coach, because it's basically turned out to be an opportunity for two dudes who might not be as young as you think to talk about ladies in an objectifying and really fairly unbecoming way. I guess it's locker room talk. Here's Pete Schrager, who hosts Flying Coach with Sean McVay, talking about a story that Cliff Kingsbury shared when he joined the podcast with McVay and they could make fun of each other.
They tell a story that I'd never known that I think everyone should listen to this podcast, where essentially it was a meaningless Week 17 game last year. Both teams weren't going to the playoffs. And Kingsbury calls McVay before the game, like hours before kickoff, and is like, I need two field passes. And McVay's like, what are you talking about? You need two field passes. And we're about to coach against each other. I need two field passes. The game was in the LA Coliseum. It was the last game at the LA Coliseum. And it turns out it was for a European Instagram model that Kingsbury had met and wanted to get it on the field before the game.
I mean, Cardinals are fighting for their playoff lives in that game, right? Wasn't it that? Wasn't there a possibility that they could make it into the playoffs at the very end of the regular season?
Well, he said last year, but when he was talking about the Coliseum, I think he means the year before last.
Gotcha.
Right, if it was at the LA Coliseum.
Okay.
I don't even care about that. Like, I have no interest in listening to dudes bro out in their stories about girls. Like, I don't. I didn't really in my 20s. I really don't. I think it's immature. If I was a fan of the team, I would be annoyed by it, and I would think it's frat boy behavior. And if I was the owner of the team, I'd be mad. I was like, you guys are looking like doofuses. Like you're looking like sexist doofuses.
I think worse is that it just shows that at least one of them is not 100% focused on football. And you know, Danny, there is an element I think that every coach in the NFL might need of seeming like someone that could live in his mother's basement, where they are just so nerdy about football that these distractions that might come as a result of, I don't know, being handsome or suave, in the case of Sean McVay and Cliff Kingsbury, where your personal life maybe weighs a little bit more heavily than the actual coaching side of things. I want someone who is basically going to go to work at my football facility at 4 a.m. and not leave until 2 a.m. the next day.
Yeah, you want them to be as miserable looking as possible.
Pretty
because
much.
You're like, the troll, yeah. He's clearly not spending his time on his own grooming.
Yeah.
Because all he's doing is coaching football. More than anything, I mean, they're supervisors, right? Like, you're a football coach, you're a supervisor. Like, you're put in a management role. You're given a lot of money and a lot of control and a lot of power. And while it's a male-dominated industry, it's not exclusively male. And
it's changing, right? I mean, that dynamic of it, especially you saw with the Bucks, there are more women that are being incorporated into coaching staffs across the league.
It's just, and the way the story ended, it's just juvenile. That's the best way. I have no interest in listening to Beavis and Butthead talking about how this story resolved itself. Here they are, Schrager explaining how the story about the Instagram model ended.
But they're all laughing about it, and then Sean's like, "It didn't really work out." And then Cliff said, "Yeah, yeah. Well, I won the pregame," and then Sean's like, "I bet you won the postgame too." So this is what we're dealing with. It's a different side of these coaches.
This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, this is what we're dealing with right here.
Yeah, it's
annoying.
I mean, what would they tell their players? Even if it's a meaningless game, it's still a game in the season. What would they tell their players about being focused on getting an Instagram model there? I'm sure as a coach, you would say that's not what you should be focused on. But what
hey
do you
guys,
do when
you
the,
know
that's what
it's
the
like,
coach
right?
is focused on.
You know what that's like.
The older I get, the more weirded out I get by people older than me talking about anything that has to do with their sex lives or anything like that.
Those dudes are younger than me and I'm weirded out by it. Like, whatever.
I feel like I'm of a demographic where there are people my age that definitely think that way. And I hear this and I'm like, oh my God, is this me? You know?
I had to look up Kingsbury's age because I thought maybe he was only like 31 or something. He's 41.
Ugh. All right,
cringe.
I'll climb down from my moral soapbox from the 253. Stop whining. Any real fans have every right to whine. Post-COVID, Danny is no longer a man of the people. I'm now an elitist.
Elitist, that's Danny.
That's my trigger, it turns out, too. It makes me really mad when people call me an elitist.
You're not even wearing glasses today. You're wearing two monocles. It's a very weird look.
All right, what do you got?
I am raising a flag to Trae Young. I love sports heels. And to see Trae Young, as the Knicks fans at Madison Square Garden were trying to send one last hurrah to their hometown team's way before they were officially eliminated, Trae Young shut them all up.
And leading up to this game, I know where we are. I know it's a bunch of shows around this city. And I know what they do when the show is over, so that's pretty much what it was. So,
final minutes of the game, he took a bow after bombing a three from close to half court. And in the midst of all these Knicks fans who were cheering for, you know, what they thought was an incredible season. It was an incredible season by the Knicks. He essentially not only shut them all up with that shot, he then bowed and they all proceeded to start booing, which I think is fantastic.
It was well done. He's a good troll. Watching the passion and hearing the passion in Madison Square Garden was awesome. I have a lot of questions about how the Knicks played that series, the rotation, specifically why Derrick Rose played so many minutes. Trae Young was awesome. Trae Young was awesome, and he played that exactly right, and that was good for basketball. And him concluding it that way was a fantastic conclusion to it. I'm glad that the fan who spit on him, which is gross and disgusting, and I'm glad that that didn't become the dominant storyline. Yeah. I think Trae Young had fun with the crowd. And seeing Spike Lee there yesterday courtside, and Chris Rock, and Chris Tucker was there. Like, all of that stuff. It was awesome. Well played, Trae Young. Maura, your flag.
I am going to raise a flag to the Seattle Kraken. Seeing them get the second overall pick in the NHL draft in the lottery last night has just got me really excited for the fact that, you know, this time next year, we could be looking at a playoff run. It's not that out of the realm of possibility, the way that the NHL sets up these expansions. It happened for the Golden Knights the first season, so I'm just getting really excited that by the end of next month, we'll have a full-on roster of players and have hockey here. I can't wait.
I think it's fair to say you're the biggest hockey fan at the station, so I'm happy for you that you're getting this, and I'm excited to dive back into it. It's been a long time since I've been in front of a hockey team every single day, like 10 years.
Let's get it cracking. Oh, come on. Let's go, Owen Power. We want some power. Turn the power on. All right, that's going to do it for us. We appreciate Stacey Ross joining us for Blue 42, the professor for the morning drive, Maura Dooley for keeping everything on the straight and narrow. And he is Paul Gallant. Over the next hour, he might have to take a bow after his performance.
And he is Danny O'Neill.
Coming up next.
No voice cracks from him on this day. My question for you, of all the quarterbacks in the NFC West, who's under the most pressure? I'm going to tell you why. It's not Russell Wilson. Don't go anywhere.